You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome in to the decade-ending At the Buzzer podcast, New Year's Eve. When we're recording, 2019, the end of a, let's put quotes around this word, illustrious end to a lost decade, I guess, for CU Sports. This is your co-host, Jack Barsh. Over there is your more famous co-host, Sam Mativier. Back in the States. Sam, how are you?
I've been in the States. I don't know what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm, for sure. The entire time we've recorded this podcast, you've never left the States. Exactly.
Well, this was a fun decade for me because I turned into an age where I understood football and basketball and really felt every year of the sports happening. So it's okay that this was the least successful decade of CU football history.
All I'm saying is children in the 80s got to watch movies like Ferris Bueller and Pretty in Pink to learn about heartbreak before they experienced it. You and I just got to watch CU football, which just prepared us for the rest of our lives, really. What better way to thank us than the giving us heartbreak over and over and over again?
My only salvage is that I'm a basketball fan first, and this was actually like one of the best decades of basketball, possibly the best.
Oh, it's a golden era.
So, yeah. So what do we have this week?
Well, before we look long-term view over the past 10 years, let's just go over the past 7 days. As we said last week, CU played Iona, and we hoped before we recorded that they ended non-conference at 11-2. And boy, howdy, did they end non-conference at 11-2. CU beat Iona, what was it, 99-54?
Yeah, they were doubling CU. CU was doubling up Iona's score by the time the starters came out.
Yep. Spread was 16, so just barely covered that 16-point spread there. honestly, the loudest the arena was when Jakob Dombek missed a layup to make sure that CU stayed at 99 points instead of 101. And that was the biggest cheer, or not cheer, I guess, exclamation from the crowd.
How about his – I just loved Jakob Dombek's energy in that. I know we've already gotten off the rails, but he hasn't played barely at all this season, and he got put right back in. He chucked the three, made it, and then he
got McKinley
back.
A technical for that.
Yes, McKinley got a technical for spilling out onto the bench in the celebration. And then Jakob, he hustled down for a rebound that he didn't need to get, hustled back down the floor, chucked another shot, even though CU could have just ran out the clock.
Mm-hmm.
And then he... man, I just love his attitude, and he just wants to play basketball. He's so excited.
He's like those kids that play at the halftime at the Nuggets games or the CU games, where they're just going.
Honestly, yeah, same amount of skill level too.
oh, poor Jakob. I thought he was pretty good, but whatever.
No, I think he's very fun.
Yeah, so a dominating win. Probably the best CU's looked all year, which is great. CU's peaking at the right time here. McKinley Wright was unbelievable in, he took 5 shots, 13 points out of those 5 shots, 10 assists, 1 turnover. It's exactly what we want to see from McKinley playing lower competition. Deshaun Schwartz hit all of his shots again. Shane Gatling was reinserted into the starting lineup. Played good D, moved the ball well. Evan Batty, once again, complete beast. God, he's really good. You know, what can we say? I thought it was a really good get-right game before they come into the biggest matchup of the year.
Yeah, and then to do it after an 8-day break since the Dayton game. That's always nice to see.
As Tad Boyle would say, his favorite stat, 26 assists, which is unbelievable. 26 assists on, I'm trying to think, see how many made baskets.
34 shots.
34 made shots. That also, is not sustainable, record, but oof, that's really good.
School record, 17 three-pointers made.
From 8 different players, yeah. CU shot the hell out of the ball, and they passed the hell out of the ball, and sometimes those go together. So, I don't know, easy win, which is good. It pushed CU about 10 spots up in KenPom, which is wacky to me because the Dayton loss, the Dayton win dropped them down.
Well, we should stop putting so much weight into that because we know how fluid it is.
Right. It's just nice for me to see, I guess. It's nice that CU's getting, I would consider, more and more accurate with how good they actually are. Mm-hmm. They landed at 26th in the AP poll.
Yeah, we're still ranked.
Just outside the top 25, which is too bad. This would have been the, what you said, the fourth ever, third ever top 25 matchup.
I don't know how Arizona is even ranked. They haven't beat.
I don't know how Virginia's ranked. Virginia is just not good this year, and they're ranked because purely based off of the name, I guess. But like everyone knows, they aren't that good, and they're still. I don't know. I don't get it.
Arizona's dropped 3 of their last 4, and their best win of the season was Wake Forest.
Danny Manning. So going into the biggest game of the year, CU played a really nice, clean win, dominating win. And I guess before we keep beating around the bush, let's talk about the biggest game of the year with number 4, Oregon, coming to town.
Yeah, so Oregon is like – they're the epitome of the experienced defense-first team that just – toughs out wins. They had a comeback win over Seton Hall that was spectacular to watch. Mm-hmm. That was in the Bahamas.
Yep.
Then they came back again against Gonzaga, although they lost in overtime. And then the next game, Michigan.
And then also against Michigan. Is that what you were saying?
No, I was going to say the North Carolina tight game against North Carolina. Mm-hmm. Then where they ended up losing, but then they beat Michigan at Michigan in a crazy game.
Yep.
So they are very tested. They also beat Memphis earlier this season.
And I think that was with James Wiseman. I think that was a James Wiseman Memphis. Mm-hmm. So they're the number one team player in the country, and Oregon still beat him pretty handily.
They have three top 15 wins already, then 2 other close losses to what were top 10 teams. Gonzaga is now number 1. North Carolina is unranked. So it's been a little bit of a fall for them.
There's 3 things I'm trying to keep in mind when I go into this game. Number 1, there really is not too many bad outcomes for CU as long as they keep it relatively close. So while this is a really fun game, and I think it's a really good test, and I think it's a huge boon, obviously, if CU beats the number 4 team in the country, a loss to Oregon is not going to do anything bad to resume, right? It's not going to keep goals out of reach. It's frustrating, and you know, I'd rather they win, obviously, but I don't think losing to Oregon on Thursday will hurt the macro level objectives of the season. I'm trying to keep that in mind before I get way too disappointed after whatever happens. Second thing I'm keeping in mind, Oregon has never won in Boulder. Dana Altman has never won in Boulder. They have had really good teams before, and CU has had way worse teams before, and it didn't matter because CU would still win. So
yes, Oregon's Final Four team lost to a team that lost in the first round of the NIT.
I was about to go to that game. Oregon came in here with Tyler Dorsey and Dylan Brooks and Chris Boucher, all healthy, all
Jordan
playing.
Bell. You forgot their best player, Jordan Bell.
Jordan Bell, don't you dare say that was the best player.
Who do you think was the best player?
It was absolutely Dylan Brooks.
Okay.
I hate Dylan Brooks, and it was absolutely Dylan Brooks.
Ugh.
But that team was really good. That was a really good Oregon team. That CU team was really average. it was Derek White and a bunch of guys that are guys.
Well, and Derek White showed out in that game. So.
Oh yeah. Oh, he absolutely did. I think what was he? He was I think perfect from 3, and he took about 6. It was something crazy like that. Anyways, you know, Oregon still lost that game. So I think the way that CU matches up with Oregon and the home court advantage really work in CU's favor. I'm not confident that the never won in Boulder streak continues, but it's a good thing to have going into this game. The third thing I have going into this game is against all odds in my mind, Peyton Pritchard is like one of the best players in the country. And when you have a guard on your team that's one of the best players in the country, you're going to be really hard to beat every single game.
Especially when your defense is that good.
Yeah. So Dana Altman always does a really good job of making his roster out of like the transfers and the bits and bobs that are just floating out in the college basketball ether. And I think this is one of his best roster constructions yet. Because I cannot find a hole on this roster. I cannot find a deficiency on his team.
I don't think there is one. This is a very scary team. This is the best outcome of what it could have been.
Yep. They have a ridiculous point guard in Peyton Pritchard. They have shooters in Anthony Mathis and Chris Duarte. They have shot makers and drivers in Will Richardson, CJ Walker. Shakur Justin is now coming back from injury. He's great on defense. He's an energy guy. Francis Okoro is length inside. Ugh,
They have a lottery pick in Fale Dante just kind of sitting on the bench getting ready to play big minutes.
Yeah. They're efficient on offense. They're the number four KenPom rated offense in the country. They are stifling on defense. Not CU level stifling, but they are not a pushover. They're probably one of the two best team defensive teams CU's faced this year, I would say. Probably the best team on defense CU's faced.
Depending on how you feel about Kansas, yeah.
Yeah. But the nice thing is CU's already faced three extremely high level offenses. In fact, without looking at the exact stats, I think even though Oregon is the fourth highest efficient offense in the country, Dayton and Kansas are also in the top 10, top 13. So CU knows what it feels like to play really good offensive teams. And the nice thing is they haven't played any of them at Boulder. So I think it's going to be a really fun matchup. I think it's going to be a pretty close game.
Are you going to be there?
I am planning on being there.
Okay.
It's the Thursday after New Year's, and I technically have to work, but we'll see. We'll see.
All right, I'll be there. I'm trying to get all people I can go there. It's going to be like 25, 30-ish for tickets if you're doing general admission. So there's like no good excuse for CU fans to be missing this game.
Like, yes, CU fans should know. I get some casual fans. They don't see the number next to CU's name, so they don't necessarily think this is going to be a close game. But this is the best CU team that has faced an Oregon team. Other than, I guess you can go back to 2014 when Spencer Dinwiddie's still playing. That was a really fun game. But that game was also one of the best games played at Coors. So I am expecting similar fireworks from this one. I really am excited.
My favorite game going before like they broke out, this was in the 2011-12 season, was when Nate Tomlinson hit that game-winning free throw at the buzzer. Like that.
Wow. What a great transition to the main topic of this podcast, Sam.
Oh, yes. Thank you.
You're a natural. Go ahead. Introduce it.
we're going to be doing our all-decade teams for football and basketball.
All-decade teams, all-decade moments. Just talking about the CU Athletics from 2010 to, I guess, 12/31/2019.
Yeah, and we have some other end-of-decade stuff on the website. We're doing I published like the People's Heisman team of the decade. Mm-hmm. I did my all-decade college football and college basketball teams, which you have a problem with.
Yep.
and then we're also, we should have posted by the time this is up, athletes of the decade and then the stories of the decade. So we're going to do the story of the year every year for the past 10 years.
So if for some reason you haven't been reading Ralphie Report for the last 10 years, we're going to distill it all in about three articles. So great time to start. Just going, and now I'm thinking macro level as a good double transition. Like you said, CU has never lost to Oregon in Boulder while they're part of the Pac-12 or under Tad Boyle. But really, Tad Boyle kicked off the decade of the 2010s for CU. because that was, he was the first coaching hire of this new decade. And wow, what a hit.
Yeah, he made the NIT Final Four in his first season.
With Alec Burks.
With Alec Burks and Corey Higgins.
Mm-hmm.
Then the next year, they were picked 11th. There was their preseason, they were 11th in the Pac-12. And then they won 4 games in 4 days to win the Pac-12 championship. Then they beat UNLV in the NCAA tournament. God, I love that team.
Mm-hmm.
And then they lost to Brady Heslip and the fucking Baylor Bears.
Seven threes. Seven threes, Brady Heslip.
God.
Yeah, I mean, just talking on a complete 30,000 feet flyover level, what you just said, part of that is why I think a lot of fans are so loyal to Tad Boyle, as they should be, you know, other than the fact that, you know, he's averaging, he just got his 200th win. Iona was his 200th win as a head coach at CU, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is his 10th year, so he's not even through 10 years, and he has had 200 wins at CU. So just quick math, he's averaging a little more than 20 wins a season as Colorado's head coach.
Yeah,
there is no other coach in CU basketball history that is doing that. This is the best decade in CU basketball history.
He's
because
the
of Tab Oil.
He's the best coach in CU history.
Yep. I mean, yeah. It's pretty simple. If you look what you just said, NIT Final Four his first year. He recruited Alec Burks back to Boulder, which is a huge win.
I thought – oh, do you mean after his freshman year he was going to leave? Okay,
yes.
Gotcha.
Yep.
He got Corey Higgins to stay too.
He got Corey Higgins to stay.
Corey Higgins, one of the best players in the EuroLeague, by the way.
I think he's still playing for CSKA Moscow.
No,
right?
He's playing for Barcelona.
Oh, best, even as a step up.
Yeah, the best team in Europe with Nikola Mirotic and Corey Higgins as their best players.
I mean, and then transitioning from that, which is the anti-Tab ball team. That was all offense, move the ball up and down the court. To seamlessly pivoting to what his vision was, which was defense, grit, rebounding, you know, tough out every game, because he realized the talent level at CU is not going to be at the Arizona talent level or the UCLA talent level, but you can have the attitude and toughness that's above their level, and that puts you in games that you shouldn't be in. And for this decade, CU has won games that they haven't and shouldn't have won for the previous 100 years, you know?
And I love that his first ever recruit was the epitome of Tad ball, and that's Andre Roberson.
Yep. Well, and let's not – I mean, we love Tad Boyle. Jeff Fizdelic also recruited Andre Roberson. It wasn't completely Tad find, but he epitomizes Tad's mission, you know? And
also
– go for it.
One of the more unexpected stories of the decade is Jeff Fizdelic going from CU coach to Wake Forest disappointment to one of the best and most respected assistant coaches in the NBA.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I believe CU having his name floated for a few NBA jobs, starting job. I don't know if that's true. I'm trying to remember because he was with the Rockets, right? I don't
know. Yeah. He shaped that team.
So, this decade has been largely consistent for basketball, which is nice because it makes it easy for us to sit here at the end and say who our favorite players were, blah, 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 favorite moment. So let's go through, obviously, our favorite coach of the decade is Tad. Let's go through our favorite players for CU.
Our favorite players, or are we doing the all-decade team?
Well, let's do I would say that's my all-decade team, so
okay.
Let's do all-decade team.
Okay, I think this is pretty easy. At least four of the spots are pretty easy. So I'm going to do two guards, and then a guard / forward, and then two forwards.
Okay.
So I have Spencer Dinwiddie, Alec Burks, Andre Roberson, Josh Scott. Those are my easy picks.
Yeah.
And then my fifth spot is a tentative McKinley Wright.
A tentative McKinley Wright. What's that hinging on?
Well, the season's incomplete. And so he'll only have 2.5 seasons with CU. And if you really want to go back, Corey Higgins had 2 full seasons at CU, his junior and senior year in the decade.
Hmm.
And I was kind of punishing Higgins for not playing his whole career in the decade.
Yeah.
But I'm rewarding McKinley Wright at the same time. It's a little contradictive.
I mean, That's the thing. It's hard for me to say, like, Will McKinley has had more impact in his years because Corey Higgins is an all-time leading scorer. But McKinley's probably been on better teams than Corey was, at least in his freshman and sophomore year.
Well, the team that went to the NIT Final Four, that was like the biggest NCAA tournament snub that year.
Right. They were the ones at the end that everyone's CU was the ones at the end saying, how did they not get in? That was that CU team.
And I was like, I remember complaining to my mom on the phone because I was only like 13 years old that VCU got into the NCAA tournament over CU.
Is that a Shaka Smart VCU?
Yes, that was the VCU team that went to the Final Four. Couldn't have been.
You know, I think we have similar teams. I don't know if we have the same teams. So
okay, give me yours.
I think everyone's there's an obvious number one point guard, Spencer Dinwiddie. He is patron saint of Colorado basketball now.
Having an all-star season.
Yes, he is. Might be Tab Oil's first all-star.
He would be CU's, I think, second ever all-star.
First is who? Jay Humphries?
Chauncey Billups.
Oh, duh.
I don't think Jay made the all-star game ever.
Okay, Spencer Dinwiddie, shoe-in. I think Andre Roberson, shoe-in. I think Josh Scott is a complete shoe-in. And then I think Alec Burks is a shoe-in, though it's interesting, you know, he was obviously CU's best pro prospect and probably the best offensive player CU's ever had, but I don't know. It's hard. He's one of the harder ones for me to put in there just because how short his time was in this decade.
Did you see Alec Burks?
Yeah.
Well, he played both his years.
Yeah, but he also, you know, like I said, this is my favorites, and I love Alec Burks. He was obviously electrifying to watch, but I also love, you know, my guy's the Josh Scott who overcame, you know, not being very athletic to be really good. And Alec Burks was really good and really athletic. And here's my shock pick. Instead of McKinley Wright, I am going to put Derek White on the first team.
Okay. I had Derek White on my first team originally.
I don't know if there's ever been a more one player team than that 2016 team. And Derek White was so unbelievably good. And I will say this until the end of time, but this decade looks drastically different for CU basketball if the NCAA isn't ridiculous and makes that Derek White sit a year for going from Division II to Division I basketball. I do not know why
Tell me who's on that team.
So Derek White announced to transfer, I believe, 2015? That was a 2015 season that he sat out because he played in the 2016 season. So, the 2015 season still made the NCAA tournament. And let me tell you who the starting guards were on the 2015-2016 team. They made the NCAA tournament with starting guards of Thomas Akizili, Dominique Collier, Xavier Tolton, and Josh Fortune. They all started at some point in time.
Jesus Christ.
Derek White sitting on the bench for that entire year for transferring within the same university system, so you know the credits count and you know he can do the academic work. And he's transferring up from D2 to D1, so it's not a competition or like a free agent-based holdout. They just made him sit for no reason. You're telling me right now, if you don't put Derek White as a starting point guard on that team, where you have sophomore George King, most improved player of the country that year, you have senior Josh Scott, who was an absolute beast, you have Josh Fortune now transitioning to an off-ball shooter role, you have Dominique Collier transitioning to the sixth man, you have Wesley Gordon as a cleanup guy. You have Trayshawn Fletcher coming off the bench as a defense and effort. You have Torrey Stewart as your third big now. You have Xavier Tolton, Thomas Akizili playing the cleanup man as the guards. And then you don't even play the rest. Kenny Guzanich is yikes. But that team, is a Sweet 16 Elite 8 team. Because that is, imagine the pick and roll between Josh Scott, Derek White, with George King sitting in the corner. That is a next, oh God. I get frustrated every time.
Was this the year Xavier Johnson was injured?
This is the year Xavier Johnson was injured.
Okay. Yeah, then you could do a the butterfly effect, say Xavier doesn't get injured that summer.
I just get so upset every time. That's why I'm saying Derek White is my first team, because I think he's so impactful even in his 1 year.
Because of a complete hypothetical you have?
Well, no, his 1 year, he still dragged a team that didn't want to go to the postseason to the NIT. Like, he still was amazing.
Yeah, that team didn't give a single shit, to be honest.
No, well, Derek White did.
And they beat I believe Xavier and Oregon. Did Xavier make the Final Four that year?
No.
Or they made the Elite Eight.
I think so. Was that Chris Max last year at Xavier? That might have been.
That was the Trevon Blewett team.
Yep.
I don't know.
So, anyways, to finish out my team, I'm going to have two honorable mentions. Honorable mention has to be Askia Booker because he was going to be talked about in a second as one of the most – he made one of the most impactful plays. And then
he didn't make my second team. I had Carlon over him.
Well, we can actually – that's actually a pretty good segue. My other honorable mention is one of my favorite players to ever shoot up for CU for no reason, Trayshawn Fletcher. I love Trayshawn Fletcher. I think he got the short shaft over and over and over again, and I'm so glad he thrived as a grad transfer going to Toledo. So yeah, those are my guys. That's my team.
I love Trayshawn too. My honorable mentions would be Derek White and Corey Higgins. George King was also one of my all-time favorite players for no really good reason. I just loved him.
I mean, he was a fun wing guy. I mean, he was a fun-looking player.
I just loved the way he rebounds.
Yeah, and I mean, his shot was pretty. He saved CU from a few very bad losses in his career. That Auburn game was still great.
He would just post up on campus, just like sitting in the same spot, just listening to his headphones, just not giving a shit.
Yeah.
It was great. Outside the library.
So now let's move on.
Also, Deshaun Schwartz is on my all-time favorite players.
He is up your alley.
Yeah.
He's right up your alley. Let's go to, favorite basketball moment of the decade, Sam.
Okay, I have the 2012 Pac-12 champs.
Are you saying the win over Arizona or just the entire championship?
The 4 days.
The four wins of 4 days?
Yeah, that's a singular moment to me.
Still the only team ever? Is that correct?
To what?
To win four games of 4 days.
I have no way of checking this.
I think it is. I think they're the only Pac-12 team who's won four games in 4 days to win the tournament.
So what? What were they, a six seed?
I don't remember their seeding.
But they So they had an average-ish team in the Pac-12 schedule. They got some good wins. They got some bad losses. Typical CU season. Mm-hmm. But then everything came together in those four games. They just kept fighting. That team had so much senior leadership. With Nate Tomlinson and Austin Dufault. Tomlinson now coach at CU. Austin Dufault an assistant with the Lakers now. Mm-hmm. Carlon Brown was the senior playmaker. They had Dinwiddie, Robertson, and Booker as the young energy guys. And just everything came together. It was great. Carlon Brown just created offense out of nothing.
Yeah, and it was a great proof of concept in general. That four wins of four games was a proof of concept, I think, of I'm going to keep coming back to it. But like you said, that was Tad Ball, where he just said, I'm going to recruit shot takers and shot makers like Carlon Brown, like Spencer Dinwiddie, like Askia Booker. And then I'm going to focus on defense and rebounding and trust that my guys can generate enough offense for us to win. And it worked against the best teams in the league.
Well, that was also an extremely, extremely weak Pac-12 season. CU was the only Pac-12 team to make the tournament that year, I believe.
I mean, you say that, but also, CU was part of that being a weak Pac-12. It's not like CU was head and shoulders above everyone, and then they ran the table.
No.
Arizona still had ridiculous talent, and Cal still had – that was back when Cal had – I forgot who the coach
Jorge
was.
Jorge Gutierrez.
Was it Quanza Martin back then? Was it Mike Montgomery still? I don't remember. But
they had Jorge Gutierrez and Alan Crabb, correct?
Yeah, Alan Crabb.
Okay.
They weren't a tire fire like they are now. And CU just hammered them over and over and over again. And there are some great posters from that. There's the Carlon Brown windmill poster from that tournament.
Oh, my God, yes.
There's the Andre Roberson dunk over everyone in Cal poster from that tournament. I think Spencer Dinwiddie over Stanford might have been from that Pac-12 tournament. Oh, man. It was just – that was a good
one. I mean, Washington won the conference that year in the regular season. They didn't even make the NCAA tournament. That's what I was saying. It was a weak year. Mm-hmm. It was ripe for CU to just kind of step in and make a run.
Yeah.
Because there weren't any elite teams that could just beat the shit out of them like Arizona would the next few years.
Well, my favorite moment is a little more conventional than yours. I think it's the obvious one.
It's the one I didn't pick because you picked it.
Well, thank you. it's the Askia Booker buzzer beater to beat number 6 Kansas in Boulder. That was probably CU's best team still. Still is probably CU's best team of the decade. That is one of the most iconic shots in CU history. Probably one of the best buzzer beaters of the decade. Just a complete – I mean, that whole game was fun start to finish. Then when he put on a clinic, we had the Ben Mills outplaying Joel Embiid storyline. You have the – Trayshawn Fletcher stealing and then dunking over Andrew Wiggins. And then Askew Booker, shot taker, shot maker at the end with a, I would call it a non-travel. Some people would say it's a travel.
I don't see how that's a travel.
Step through and then beautiful stroke from about the logo on the half court. And I think he knew it was going in when he left his hand. And then just splash. Especially when he comes over, tackles him, and then the rest of the fans just spill onto the court. That is something that made a lot of CU basketball fans. That shot did. And that was, I mean, that is the moment, right? That is CU's, like, that is the moment for CU basketball this decade.
Yeah, I can recall three buzzer beaters from the decade. Four, I guess, if you count George King's game tying three against Washington State. That was weird as hell.
Mm-hmm.
But I have that. I have the McKinley Wright's buzzer beater in that weird early season tournament.
Yeah, against Quinnipiac.
Yeah, and where, like, CU was supposed to go to the Bahamas, but there was a hurricane, so they went to fucking Lynchburg, Virginia instead.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then Deshaun Schwartz's buzzer beater to beat Dayton.
Right. Also a great buzzer beater.
Yes, that could be – that's another one great moment of the decade.
But it wasn't at home, and it wasn't against Kansas. And I think the fact that CU played with the big guys and then beat the big guys, and it wasn't fluky, really. It was just a really good game that they happened to come on top is it's great.
Yeah. All right. Should we move into football?
Yep. The much more fun decade that CU football had. Let's see. We technically had four head coaches in the 10 years. Going from 2010 to 2019, if you count 2010 as Dan Hawkins last year.
Yeah.
Yep. So Dan Hawkins, John Embry, Mike McIntyre, and now Mel Tucker rounds out the decade. And boy, howdy, there was a there's a lot there.
Yeah, and so we can probably spare the year by year what happened, what didn't happen, the disappointment through it all.
so we could probably.
Do you want to just go straight into our all-decade teams?
Yeah, sure.
And our favorite players?
Yeah.
All right, this one, there's, what, 24 spots, 26 spots here? So we're going to have to be a little bit quick.
Well, but, I mean, but there's some we don't necessarily have to talk about too much.
Mm-hmm. Like, we agree on the offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so quarterback, I think it's pretty easy to pick Sefo Lufau.
Yep. Only choice for me. He is the only choice.
Yeah. Second team, if you want to do a second team, there's an argument between Tyler Hansen and Steven Montez, but I'm not going to talk about that.
Yeah, I just care about Sefo.
Yeah, I just want Sefo. He also made my People's Heisman quarterback. Him and Denard Robinson were my quarterback, so you mm-hmm. should go read that because I spent too much time on that. All right, then I have one running back and then one all-purpose player.
Yeah.
And it's Phillip Lindsay and Rodney Stewart.
I think it's a very clever way to get both Phillip Lindsay and Rodney Stewart on the first team. I think they probably both belong in the first team. I mean, running back has to be Phil. He is a legend, and he is in the record book. I think he's the second leading rusher all time, so no other option. But Rodney Stewart was a bright spot during a period of CU football that didn't have a lot of bright spots.
I think Rodney Stewart might be the all-time leader in yards, the all-purpose yards.
Yeah, well, no, I think it's still – enemy.
I think okay. Well, then Stewart's second because he had all those kick return yards.
Right. I mean, God, he was fun.
Well, what he was a 4-year starter? He displaced Daryl Scott in the same recruiting class.
I think he was a 4-year starter. Another late Darian Hagan find. Darian Hagan said this tiny second 2-star out of Ohio looks pretty good. And Dan Hawkins trusted him enough where they signed him. And then he outperformed the two other 4-star running backs that were in that class, 5 to 4-star running backs.
Who was the other one?
Ray Polk, who moved to safety.
Oh, I didn't even know he played running back. I just knew him as a safety.
Yep.
All right, receivers. This one's hard because I'm only picking two receivers. So I have to leave
I disagree with you on one, but keep going.
Okay, I want to hear it. So I have Paul Richardson as the obvious pick.
Huh. That's where I disagree, but keep going. Oh,
okay. And then I have Laviska Shenault. And then I'm leaving off Nelson Spruce.
Yeah, so I think Laviska, you have to put on there. He is singular in Colorado history, I think, in his talent. He has a lot of great moments. It's too bad that the teams around him didn't get him to a bowl game or anything a little more valuable, but that's true for almost every player on this list that we're doing. But Laviska's a freak, one of the best CU offensive players of all time. And then I don't agree with Paul Richardson. I love Paul Richardson. He had one of the greatest single seasons in CU wide receiver history. But there's also a kid on here who had a better single season in wide receiver history, and that's Nelson Spruce. And I think Spruce belongs over Richardson just because of how he was the offense in that 2014 team. There was nothing else. I think starting running back pinball between Tony Jones and Christian Powell, that tells you everything you need to know. Nelson Spruce had, what, 22 catches against Cal, something like that? There was nothing else for CU to do than other than throw to Nelson, and he delivered.
Okay, I think
Nelson is first team.
You're making a very convincing case.
I also just love Nelson because he and my friends had Nelson Spruce's old dorm room, and Nelson was scratched into the wall.
I also have Scotty McKnight on my second team. Thought he's worth mentioning.
Yep, I think
he is. As a very, very 2011 player.
Tony Clemens? Do you remember Tony Clemens?
I remember Tony Clemens.
Bryce Bobo, Shea Fields, probably get some mentions. But I think Spruce and Laviska belong on the first team together.
Yeah, all right. Then tight end and offensive line, we have the same opinions.
Yep.
There's nothing hot takey here.
I love Sean Irwin.
Yeah,
I love Sean Irwin.
Tight end to Sean Irwin, who is basically a blocker.
God, I love him. His blocks in 2016 were just beautiful. Just beautiful.
Yeah, well, tight end's been a pretty dark position for CU.
Honestly, you could just based off of Brady Russell's last season catching the ball, he belongs in the top three here, which is sad.
I'm putting him over Ryer Greer on the
second
team.
I do like Ryer Greer, but whatever. Oh, yeah. So Sean Irwin, okay. I think, is first team no matter what.
Yeah. And then linemen, this is actually pretty solid.
Yeah.
Nate Solder and David Bakhtiari.
Easy.
Easy. Ryan Miller at guard. Easy.
Easy.
Daniel Munyer at center, which is...
I think that's pretty easy.
And then the last spot is kind of difficult. I'm going to give it to Tim Lennott. Or Lynott. I don't know how to pronounce his name still.
Lynott. I think Tim Lynott, but
yeah,
I think the only argument you have is maybe you should put Munyer at guard and then Kelly at center, but whatever.
Alex
Kelly deserves some mention. I think he's the only CU player to play for three coaching staffs, recruited by Hawkins, played under Embry, and then played under McIntyre.
Also a wonderful personality.
Yeah.
And he scored the first touchdown of the 2016 season.
That's right. The first touchdown of the rise is Alex Kelly's. And that's actually a pretty good offensive line individually. It's just too bad that no one could, for 7 years, they couldn't put a solid group of five together.
Also, CU had David Bakhtiari, Nate Solder, Rodney Stewart, Seth Alufo, Jimmy Smith, Jaleel Brown, and they still went like 2-10.
The 2012, you mean?
Yeah, something like that.
I think Jordan Webb was the quarterback in 2012.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Anyways.
No, I'm talking about 2011. They went 3-9.
But then that was
3-9.
I don't remember the quarterback
Hansen.
Was that Hansen's last year? Yes. Special shout out also to Stefan Nembot. Larger than life in every single way. Just couldn't beat out Solder and Bakhtiari, which is understandable. But
yeah, we both have Nembot on our favorite players of the decade list.
Yep. Let's go quickly to defense. Also, I don't know if there's going to be a lot of argument here. I might have a little bit nitpicky with your list, but most are going to have the same players.
All right. Yeah, so I have three down linemen because CU's been playing the 3-4 most of the decade, if not all of it. I don't really know, nor care. So Mustafa Johnson's the best defensive lineman we've had.
At defensive end, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Jordan Carroll was fantastic in 2016.
I also agree with Jordan Carroll.
Josh Tupou, I think, was our best nose tackle during the decade.
Tupou was one of the best nose tackles of the Pac-12. I think he's still in the NFL. Yeah, I would say absolutely Tupou. Tupou is the only nose tackle even option. The only thing I'm going to add is I love Chidera Uzodiribe.
I had him, and you criticized me for it when I made this list in like August.
I don't know. I mean, he was a good player on a lot of really bad teams, and it's yeah. And that's what endears him to me. I don't know if he deserves to be over there over Carroll or Johnson. I don't think so, but he also didn't have the benefit of being coached by Jim Leavitt and being surrounded by NFL defensive backs. So
yeah, I if you had four defensive linemen, I'm putting Chidera Uzodiribe
yep.
there.
Yep.
Okay, edge rusher. I have Jimmy Gilbert.
Only option. Maybe you can do George Hippolyte. George Hippolyte, I think, is at the end of the near the start of 2010. I think George Hippolyte played, but Gilbert deserves to be on there.
Derek McCartney as a culture player is also something to consider.
Yeah.
Okay, interior linebacker, I'm doing two.
Okay.
I have Nate Landman and Kenneth Olubode.
I agree with Kenneth Olubode. I think Kenneth Olubode is unsung, I think, with what he did. That 2016 team works because a lot of what Olubode and Gamboa did. And I think Landman is going to end up being one of the best linebackers that CU's had in the past 25 years. So I also agree there. I'd like to mention Rick Gamboa and Addison Gillum. I love Rick Gamboa and I love early Addison Gillum.
Freshman Addison Gillum, absolutely a terror.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm also going to add a left backer / star position.
Mm-hmm.
Cause we've seen that the past half decade. I'm going to put Davion Taylor as the only option there.
Yeah, Ryan Moeller deserves some mention just because of how much he stepped up in 2016.
Also, he lost to my high school in the state championship game.
Yep, Rifle High School. Yep. Famously lost. Moeller also forced the fumble against Utah at the end of that 2016 team that Olubode returned for a touchdown that sealed that win. So he deserves mention for that too. But Davion Taylor, I think, will end up being better in the NFL than he was in college. And he's going to be a nice name for CU to throw out there in recruiting.
Absolutely. As a player, they developed kind of because he was so raw coming into the year. I remember DJ Elliott, rest in peace. he was talking about Davion just being just a project. Like this guy is not like he's going to be amazing, but he's a project.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we saw. Just a freak athlete.
Mm-hmm.
Who like really learned how to play his last five games of his career.
Yeah, I mean, it's just too bad that he learned football so late and he also couldn't redshirt anywhere. But, you know, I'm just happy that we had him for the two years he did.
Yeah, okay, then I'm just going to do four defensive backs because CU's had a lot of really good cornerbacks, but only one good safety. So I have Chidobe Awuzie and Jimmy Smith as the clear top two.
Good Lord, that's so good.
I know. I love those two so much. I think Cheeto is my favorite player of the decade. Him, Cepho, and Lindsey.
Okay. Cheeto and Jimmy Smith are your bookends. That's a good start.
With Isaiah Oliver, Craig Henderson, and Jaleel Brown as the depth. Ugh,
which is ridiculous. And Chappelle.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Chappelle Brown as the slot corner. But then I have Akella Witherspoon as the third defensive back, and then mm-hmm. Tedrick Thompson as the safety.
Yeah.
The one good safety we've had, and he was
I think amazing. Off a lobby was pretty good.
I disagree.
Okay, I think he was good at what he was supposed to do, I guess. I think off a lobby was good being next to Tedrick, I guess, is what I'm going to say. Is how I'm going to say that.
Okay, yeah, that's a...
But that this is the one group that CU has been able to consistently produce, honestly going back to the 80s, you know, is the defensive backs. And this decade had a lot of really, really, really good defensive backs that are on some really, 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 really bad teams. Greg Henderson, once again, shout out, toiled through the worst moments of CU history and was honestly really good.
He was also like the only consistent defensive player through that whole ordeal.
Yep.
That was when he was there with – okay, also shout out to Jason Espinoza.
Honorable mention, Jason Espinoza, Espinoza Island. Honorable mention, D.D. Goodson, who played defensive back for like three games.
I think that Jason Espinoza is like the Sabatino Chen of football. Because
everyone, it's just a weird reference that if you were watching CU in that year, everyone knows who that is.
And everyone loves it.
let's quickly go through the specialists. Kicker, I guess, is Will Oliver, I guess, right? Has to be.
I guess.
Honestly, not the best position for CU after Crosby left. Kick returner, I think, is has to be Rodney Stewart. I don't know. McIntyre and Tucker are both pretty conservative the way they do kicks, so there weren't a lot of options. Mm-mm. But Rodney Stewart was good when he was back there. Punt returner, I would say you have this, you have it right. Isaiah Oliver is probably number one. I think he's the only punt return touchdown of the decade for CU. Yeah, so
and against the UCLA in a 20-14 win.
For the win, yeah.
Yeah.
And then punter is the hardest one to look at. I think Kenny is really good.
We've had such a spoiled decade for punters.
Yeah, we Alex Kenny is solid. I think he's going to actually do okay in the NFL if he gets there. But I think you also have this correct in that Dara O'Neal was one of the best in the country. And he played for, what, 4 years?
Yeah, and he's a fan favorite. Iconic.
Yep.
Local guy, too. His
he can punt with both feet.
Yeah, yeah. And then his brother plays for the Rapids.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, his family lives in and around Boulder. Really lovely people.
There you go. I just knew that he could punt with both feet, and he had one of the best fake punts of all time against Hawaii in 2014.
Which I don't remember. I remember Alex Kinney's punt against Hawaii. I think Alex Kinney's first punt was blocked.
I also remember Alex Kinney punting the ball directly into the ass of a long snapper in Michigan. Oh, jeez.
The best punter to have terrible moments.
All things considered, it's not that bad of a team. It's just, you know, there are much better decades where we could pull all-decade teams for CU.
Yeah.
And 2020 is looking to be better already, so.
Yeah. All right. Do you have any favorite players? I listed my three favorites. I have Awuzie, Lindsey, and Lufau.
Yeah. I have one favorite player. He captured my heart. I will defend him to my last breath. Sefa Lufau is everything that I want a college player to be. He is my far and away favorite player. In terms of watching them play, I loved watching Tedrick play. I think he was so smooth, and the fire he played with. Tito Bay was like athletic and smooth, and he knew what he was doing at all times, but Tedrick was a little more fiery, and he laid the wood. I loved watching Tedrick play. Obviously, I love watching Phil play. LaViska was singular in what he could do, but mm-hmm. No one got me like Sefo got me. I legitimately had tears in my eyes when I had to watch him play for the last time at Folsom against Utah in a gritty win where, once again, 3rd and 5, the offense was line him behind Sean Irwin and just run him until he can't run anymore.
God.
He and Cheeto and Tedrick and all those senior leaders are the reason that CU won 10 games that year, are the reason that CU went to a bowl game at all this decade. I don't know. He was – it's just – that's a guy – to me, I'm just going to remember as like, oh, that's what I want a college quarterback to be, just complete grit, toughness. He knows he didn't have the – he doesn't have Montez's arm. He doesn't have the best legs, but he's going to run anyone over who stands in his way. And I just love that. I love Sefo.
Okay. Speaking of Sefo, give me your moment of the decade.
You know, I think it has to be from 2016. I think it has to – I could have picked either the Nebraska catches, I guess. But 2016 was just a magical moment for CU in general. And for me, the most fun I had watching a singular CU play was being at the Big House when CU played Michigan in 2016 with like 500 or 1,000 other CU fans. And they started off hot. They were up 21-7, and then Michigan figured out that no one could cover Jake Butt. So they moved down the field, and then Jabril Peppers was Jabril Peppers and punt returns.
Derek McCartney was also injured, and then Michigan realized
they could. So was Diego Gonzalez.
Yeah, okay. And then Michigan realized without McCartney they could just get to the edge every single time.
Yeah. Luckily, though, for CU, Sefa was dealing until he got hurt. I think he had a stress fracture in his foot. So all the momentum's on Michigan's side.
I think he hurt his ankle.
It might have been an ankle. I don't know.
He fractured his foot the year before.
That's right. Thank you. It was his ankle. But all the momentum's on Michigan's side. They're on the road. 100,000 people are expecting a win now. And CU comes out there. First play from scrimmage in the second half is Sefa Lufau on a broke, on a hurt foot, hurt ankle, stepping up, knowing he's going to get hit, throwing a bomb to Shea Fields, wide open, 75-yard touchdown. And everyone was quiet. Everyone was dead quiet, except for the 1,000 CU fans who just watched. One of the plays I'll always remember. And then you watch Sefa Lufau crumple on the field after that, because he just got nailed by Chase Winovich, and he has to get helped off the field. He can't even celebrate. But for a second, you know, that was the last time CU led that game. So for a second, I thought he's trying to will CU to a win, and he was dealing that game regardless. And then Montez came in and things spiraled after the game. But if you just take a moment, that is my moment, is watch it. That is perfect Sefo. It's just heart and grit and toughness and making something happen.
I think that game kind of captures what could have been out of that season. I know CU went 10-2 in the regular season, but I think there's a legit argument that CU would have gone 12-0.
CU did not lose a game. CU did not lose a game that year that Sefo started and finished. They did not.
So they took the lead on that play. This was against number 4 Michigan in the Big House. That's a huge deal. CU was, they were 1-0, 2-0.
They were 2-0, coming off of a dismantling of CSU.
Yeah, absolutely shit rocked them. That was a great. That was the first.
What was it? 56-7 Idaho State win, I think.
Yeah, something like that. But
it was just something that hasn't been seen before. You know, it was before we were celebrating nice wins over Charleston Southern in 20 whatever, and then, you know, coming off of a 4-win season, and then CU just comes out with their hair on fire.
And the seniors on that team, they just carried them.
Yep.
My God. But yeah, all so right.
Your moment.
I think I'm going to pick the Michigan game as well, honestly, because I want to talk about it. Because for me, it was Awuzie's strip sack that turned into the Derek McCartney touchdown. To me, that puts CU up 21-7, I think. And I just was like, oh, shit, this is possible.
McCartney also got injured on that play.
Yeah.
But, yeah, man. That whole season, obviously, like we said, is filled with moments. I think that Michigan game, like we both said, it was kind of a wake-up call for everyone, saying, like, oh, this team is actually really for real. This is a really, really good team. And it's a what could have been. It's a what did happen, honestly, too. Like, that was still a really good thing.
I think if Sefo didn't get hurt, they might win that game against Michigan. And they definitely beat USC.
Yeah. Oh, God, they were so close to beating USC anyways.
Yeah, and that was with Montez having a pretty bad game.
There are other moments, I think. The Laviska catch at Nebraska, Scott Frost's first game, is up there. I think the Tony Brown catch, or the storm field, the field storm against Nebraska this year is up there.
Witherspoon's interception against Oregon to clinch that win.
Oh, yeah. And I think also clinching the Pac-12 South Division Championship against Utah with a drag-out game. And rushing the field then is also up there. First, I think that was the first sellout in CU in 15 years or whatever it was.
I want to say, just in a vacuum as well, Paul Richardson's touchdown pass to D.D. Goodson against Oregon.
Yeah. Bryce Bobo's touchdown pass to Philip Lindsay. You know, there are a lot of moments, and that 2016 team, I think, is responsible for a lot of them. I don't know. It's when you look at stuff like that, it's like, this is why I love this sport and college athletics in general, is like these stories and these kids, like, it's just really fun to look back at that. And I can remember exactly it's a connection I think you have that you can't fake with an NFL or a professional team. You know, and we were both in school for that 2016 season. That's something
in campus.
Campus
just felt different.
Yep.
People were just so like excited. And I know there's like a lot of like, people are upset all the time about how much funding football gets and how much attention it gets compared to other things, but it's like a huge deal sometimes. And that just felt different.
Yeah. I mean, that was a team that brought a lot of people back on board with CU football and showed that it wasn't completely dead, which a lot of people were, you know, fan support was waning, and that team brought a lot of it back. It was a convalescence of a lot of stuff coming together too, where if you just look at the even not just like what's on the field, but CU video was at a ridiculous level that year, which brought us some amazing footage. You know, the rise in part happened because of all of those videos that they put out that were Emmy award winning. You know,
shout out to Matt Cisneros, love you,
Matt Cisneros, Jamie Guy, Johnson Nelson. It was a combination of Mike McIntyre realizing he needed to hire someone else on defense and finding someone, plucking someone named Jim Levitt out of thin air.
He did that the year before, but yeah.
Well, yeah, but coming together and making everyone play just their ass off all the time, you know, bringing in Chev to speed up the offense.
McIntyre getting coach of the year despite the seniors leading that team.
Well, I don't know.
Sorry, that's a kind of a cheap shot.
And then it obviously didn't end well, but that to me defines the decade for CU. It's just that team is why people love college football. That was all experienced players we've watched for 3 years grow, and then they just decided we're going to win now.
We
all got to celebrate with them. We all grew with them and celebrated with them. It was fun.
We also should have been in the Rose Bowl that season. But the Pac-12 was like, no, we're going to put USC in here instead, even though we won the South.
Well, we see you got punished for going to the championship game, which never makes sense to me. But
even though Lufau got injured in that game too. But, you know, and that Washington team made the playoffs. So, I don't know. I'm still bitter about that. Who cares if we would have gotten rocked by Penn State? It would have been fun to see Tedrick get ran through by Saquon Barkley.
Well, this has been the CU decade going through. Please let us know what are your favorite players, your favorite moments. Who do we leave off? Who do we not talk about? And as we enter a new decade, 2020, Tab Oil's still here, thank God, but brand new coach who only got 1 year in the 2010s, and hopefully a lot more wins in the next decade.
Yep. All right. Thanks, Jack.
All right, signing off for the last time in 2019.